Good morning, class. Let's dive in and hear the results of your assignment. Who wants to go first?
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
They made it thicker, they made it hotter, and they made it juicier than ever.
This is making insanely good sense to me.
Speaking of guitar, you had one of your biggest hits that we played. The name escapes me. What's it like? Sorry.
What it's like.
What it's like.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Don't trust the yellow man.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
What a creep fest that guy was.
And now,
Lisa, do I have my pants on?
Our feature presentation.
For the moment, that's not how I like it, but okay.
Oh, very nice. Good answer. Well done, Lisa May. Hey, party people, welcome into another all-new Kevin and Bean Show. It is a Friday, and oh my God, what a program we have for you today.
Yeah, it's
I'm
crazy.
I'm trembling, and I'll tell you all about it in a second. But first, though, here's an odd story. This is from our friends in Florida.
Florida?
Which, as you know, is the craziest state in the union. There's a 50-50 chance if you ever see a story that is bizarre that it'll come out of the state of Florida. I don't know what's going on down there. I don't know what's in the water. I do know that I am not visiting. But this one happened in the classroom in Lehigh Acres is where it is in Florida. And a teacher is in a lot of trouble because one of the kids in the class was talking to a friend who had a wiggly tooth that was getting ready to fall out. And the one friend said to the other friend, "Ooh, I hope the Tooth Fairy comes." And you can guess what happened next. The teacher said, "Tooth Fairy isn't real."
Oh.
It's like Santa Claus. It's your mom and your dad. There's no Tooth Fairy. So there's all sorts of strongly worded letters and calls for him to be reprimanded or suspended or fired. It's just, it's out of control. But the reason I bring up this story and the reason that I'm so surprised by this story, and, you know, what the hell do I know about children? These are sixth graders.
I was going to ask you how old they were.
Yes, because that does make a difference. They're 11. They're not 6, okay? They are 11 years old. Now, it's been a while for me, but don't you pretty much know the Santa Claus / Tooth Fairy deal at 11?
And wouldn't the other kids start to mock the hell out of you if you said, "I hope the Tooth Fairy comes"?
Yeah.
I mean, someone's going to tell you at that age. Someone.
That's what I thought, but the reason I wanted to bring it up was to find out if I'm way out of line and do kids believe stuff like that late?
No.
Not that late.
No.
How
that
old
age,
are you when you get
your to... parents putting money under your pillow?
Yeah.
How old are you when you get the Tooth Fairy reveal?
I think like 9 or 10.
At the latest. Third grade.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If Muggs is right, if it is 9 or 10, then maybe erring on the side of caution would make sense if these kids are only 11. To me, though, 11 seemed like 5 years too late. That's what I was surprised about.
Yeah. You want to know what's awesome?
Right.
Tell me.
My kindergarten teacher, God rest her soul, Miss Gilbert, she had to been 91 when we had her. She told us in kindergarten that the Tooth Fairy wasn't real.
You're kidding.
So I found out at 5.
Oh.
That explains everything, Muggs.
Yeah.
You're so
that
traumatized.
Hurt you.
Yeah.
That hurt you. Well, the school district says the teacher feels bad about what transpired, regrets that he has upset his students. It was not done intentionally or maliciously. The father of the lead parent in the attack on this teacher says, "I hope teachers won't feel the need to take it upon themselves to discuss things that should clearly be handled at home." So,
is this kid still breastfeeding? Just tell the truth.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. No comment from Santa Claus on the story. But the kid, by the way, the kid, Julie is her name.
Mm-hmm.
The one who, said that about the Tooth Fairy said she still believes in the Tooth Fairy and Santa. It's her feelings toward her teacher that have changed. So I think that's
makes sense.
She's going to grow up and not believe in evolution and everything.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling.
In the light of the fact, she's still going with the Tooth Fairy. Although, if you're 11 and the Tooth Fairy is bringing you money and Santa Claus is bringing you Christmas presents, why not believe in it, right?
Right. There's nothing to dissuade you.
Exactly. It seems like there's a lot more reasons to go with it. So anyway, crazy story, 11. Mm-hmm. I just thought that's
I didn't even
old.
Think you were still losing teeth by then. Sixth grade. That seems old, doesn't it?
Lisa, we know nothing about children.
I know, you're right. I should just stop right now.
That's apparently what we're learning. And there are people who actually have children right now who are mocking us because we sound as clueless as we are.
You're right.
All right, huge Kevin and Bean show today.
That man has the largest penis I have ever seen.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And I'm a little bit nervous. Muggs, you've been on fire. You've been doing a great job the last few days. I feel like you now are committed to keeping your job, and I appreciate that. But if ever I needed your help on a program, it's today, because we have a lot of guests that have very specific times that we can speak with them, and we need to be on the clock. We need to keep a close eye on how things are running today.
This should be good.
So let's not screw up.
You got it.
For instance, what if I were to tell you 30 minutes from right now we're going to be talking to Taylor Lautner from the Twilight movies and the new film Abduction? What if I said that was how we're going to get going here today?
I think that is a great way to start.
A young man named Kevin Smith. I'm not familiar with his work, but apparently he's a writer, actor, director. Mm-hmm. He's going to be joining us in studio next hour. The great Jason Statham on the program today talking about his movie opening up today called Killer Elite. Phil Kogan, host of The Amazing Race, coming back for yet another new season. He's on the show later on today. Jonah Hill drops by again. Just talked to him a couple of weeks ago about an upcoming film. This time it's Moneyball. He's got Moneyball in the theaters this weekend.
Amazing.
How about Cousin Sal on the program? You went 3-0 if you followed his football picks last week. He's going to have some new suggestions for you to make imaginary bets because real bets would be illegal. Unless you're going to Las Vegas. So we'll have Cousin Sal on to talk about this football weekend. LaQuisha reviews last night's Jersey Shore.
God bless her.
I did not see it, but I got emails suggesting that Snooki showed her vagina on last night's show.
What?
I mean, I guess I'm not surprised. That sure sounds like something Snooki would do.
But they can only show so much.
They can only show so much, yeah. But what about the horror? What about the eyes of the people that she showed her vagina to?
Well,
what about
them?
They're not immune. They don't get it blurred out like we do on TV. So I can't wait to hear about that. Also, Anna Torv is going to be joining us on the program today. She is from Fringe. And if I didn't mention it, Ralph's got the movie beat, too. He's going to review all the great films that are out in theaters this weekend. So that is that's a hell of a lot of show.
The biggest, K-Rock, best surprise of the summer.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
I don't know if I'd want to be Taylor Lautner. It seems like a lot of pressure, Lisa, to be adored around the world, young, good-looking, rich.
I think he probably is enjoying it just fine.
Really?
Yeah.
If only he were here, we could ask. Maybe he's better equipped to handle what it must be like to be Taylor Lautner than I. It just seems like too much work for me. Taylor, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Is it a good deal to be Taylor Lautner? Is it an enjoyable life, or is it a pain in the ass?
You know, I am definitely having the time of my life right now, and I'm very thankful and fortunate to be here today. But no, it's great. I'm having a great time.
I feel so bad for celebrities like you, and there are a few in the pocket, and because of the success of the Twilight franchise, it just seems like everything would be difficult to go places and to have a private time or to go someplace where you could just relax and be a regular person. I mean, when you get into acting, you get into acting because you love it. You don't get into a lot of people don't get into it because they want to be this famous, and it just seems like there'd be a lot of downside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you definitely don't think about that at first. And you know, I continue to tell myself that there's pros and cons to everything, and the pros in this situation just heavily outweigh the cons. So I will gladly take all of those things that come with it just to be able to do what I love to do.
Nice to hear you say that.
It is. It's great to hear you say it. And I have to tell you, I'm impressed by you, Taylor. I don't have a vagina, so I haven't seen the Twilight movies. But when I see you on shows, you're always, you know, polite and well-mannered, and you seem friendly, and you seem smart, and you seem grounded. And I mean, I think, a guy in your position, it would be easy to go the opposite way. So well done, sir.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Abduction is the movie that you chose after the Twilight movies. This is going to be my coming outside of the franchise. I'm sure you had a lot of different movies you could have chosen from. Why did you decide to make this one?
You know, that's a really good question, because I wanted to choose something that I'm passionate about. And I heard this idea for the first time, and it really excited me. I mean, one, it's definitely a movie that I would want to go see. And it's always great when you can, tell a story that, you know, about something that, that you would enjoy watching yourself. And then I also knew that this movie would challenge me quite a bit physically and emotionally, and it, it definitely did, and I was looking forward to that.
I mean, it's a decision. It's really rolling the dice because you're carrying a movie. You're the lead character star of a film rather than what a lot of people do, which is, hey, I'm going to be in an ensemble piece. I'm going to kind of work my way up to the lead. You know, I don't want all the pressure on my shoulders first time out. But I mean, this is all you, dude.
It was a little different. I mean, it was definitely a lot of hard work, but I was prepared for that. But at the same time, I was surrounded by an amazing cast. I mean, I was working opposite Sigourney Weaver, Alfred Molina, Maria Bello, Jason Isaacs, and I really couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, they're awesome.
We always ask this question, especially for young actors. I mean, look, you're a professional, and I'm sure you had a great time on set with, say, Sigourney Weaver. But there have to be times when you're standing there and you're even in the scene and you go, that's freaking Ripley. What the hell's – how is this happening? How am I on the screen with her? I mean, there must be a fanboy part of you inside in addition to being the professional who's going to get the job done, right?
Absolutely, and especially with her. I remember showing up on set the first time and doing, you know, my first take with Sigourney, and it was very, very surreal for me. It still is today when I watch the movie and I see myself in a scene with her. It's very cool.
This is the voice of Taylor Lautner on the Kevin DeBean Show. We're talking about his new film called Abduction, directed by the great John Singleton. It opens up everywhere today. You talked about how it was challenging physically and just, I mean, the rush of seeing the commercials and how much stuff you do. And I've read that you did a lot of your own stuff, or at least wanted to do as much as they would allow you to do, right?
I definitely wanted to do much as they would allow me, and I was very surprised because they pretty much allowed me to do everything. I mean, it wasn't easy. I definitely had to negotiate, but thankfully, you know, at the end of the day, I was able to do pretty much all of my own stunts.
There must be stunt guys there who are just standing on set wanting the work and just giving you the evil eye. Because, hey, that's my job. Come on. You be the guy who talks. I'll be the guy who drives and runs and throws.
Right, I know. I felt really bad because I do. I have an incredible stunt double named Maddie, and I definitely felt bad for him, but he was very important for me. He basically, he taught me how to do a lot of things that I'd never done before, and I couldn't have done a lot of the stuff without his help.
Let's hear a clip from the trailer of the film we're talking about. It is called Abduction. I think this is a good representation to kind of tell you what the film's all about. Listen up.
Who are you, really?
I'm one of your keepers, Nathan. I'm put in place to look after you.
It's the arrangement I made with your father in case something like this ever happened.
Now, in less than 20 seconds, we're going to hit a soft curve before the bridge. I'm going to slow down just enough for you to jump out.
Jump?
It's 30 feet down to the river.
Wait a minute, this is insane.
15 seconds. And remember, from now on, do not trust anybody.
Take a breath.
Jump!
It's going to be okay.
Now!
Whoa.
Okay, so that happened.
Yeah.
So Nathan's
that's an exciting scene right there.
It is, yeah. So Nathan's just living his life. He thinks he has the perfect domestic situation, and he's got, loving parents. And all of a sudden, in an instant, it's just all turned upside down. He's just got to deal with everything he knows is wrong, right?
You got that right. It's very, very exciting. It will keep you on the edge of your seat, you're trying to guess what's going to happen next. There's a lot of cool twists and turns, and I'm very excited for people to see this movie.
It does sound good. Abduction comes out everywhere today, and then I guess the first part of the last Twilight book/movie.
The last part.
Right. It's going to be November, and then you got to wait a year for the next one to come out the following November 2012, right?
You got that right. That'll be tough.
You're not even going to remember filming that Twilight movie by the time you start doing press for it next year.
I know. It'll be like 2 years ago at that
point. You look so much older.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to go, who's this dude? All right, Taylor. Hey, we've had Rob Pattinson on before. We've had Kristen Stewart on before. We've never had the opportunity to talk to you before, and I'm glad we did get a chance to catch up with you for this one called Abduction. It does look great. I think our listeners will like it. I'm glad we got a chance to have you on, man. You have a great weekend, all right?
Thank you so much. It means a lot. And, thanks for having me, guys.
K-Rock.
There's no upside. There's nothing positive that comes out of them.
Kevin. 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 Indian.
Kevin and Bean. K-Rock.
Hey, Friday on the show, how about Jason Statham joining us next hour?
That's right. I'll be here talking to Bean, and I'll be talking about breaking people's heads open and killing them and shooting them.
Talking about his new film called Killer Elite. Also, Phil Kogan joins us. He is the host of the
That's
Amazing
right, brother.
Race.
That's right.
No.
Everyone runs an Amazing Race. It's incredible.
That's
what are you
Hulk
do,
Hogan.
Brother? What are you going to do when the race is over?
Nope, you're thinking of Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
in
I'm
fact.
Sorry.
Jonah Hill will be here. His new film is Moneyball.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nothing for that.
I got nothing. Sorry.
Also, Cousin Sal with the NFL picks, LaQuisha on the Jersey Shore, Anna Torv on the show from Fringe,
oh,
which is coming back tonight.
Come on, Fringe.
And so much more. All right, let's try to put the pieces together Hangover style. Where was Kevin Smith last time you saw him, Rob?
Well, here's the thing. I blame myself because I kept Kevin Smith out late last night. He and Jason Mewes, who you know, of course, is Jay and Silent Bob, those two guys, and myself, we were at Jimmy Kimmel's Feast of San Gennaro last night, the Italian festival Jimmy Kimmel puts on every year in Hollywood to raise money for charity. And last night was the prima notte, as they say in the mother tongue. And so we were out with the wives. We took them out, and we had a little get-together. And it was lovely. And then I realized, Smith has to be on the radio early tomorrow. Last night wasn't the night to keep him out late. So he's on his way.
Oh, is that what you've heard?
Yes, he's okay. His own route, as they say.
How? Please, English only here on the show.
Sorry.
How late were you guys out?
Not that late, actually. Well, he went home before I did.
Of course he did.
And yet I'm here. So.
What was it like? I know Kevin's in. One of the reasons he's coming is because he's still urging people to see Red State, which is available in many different formats. In fact, it's available on demand. It is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray October the 18th. And you still are having screenings at the New Beverly Cinema.
Yeah, this is the cool one this Sunday because we are doing another screening at the New Beverly, which is a great, I guess, they call them a retro theater or an art house. It's where they show classic films from the past primarily. And it's been that for a long time. But recently, Quentin Tarantino bought it and spruced it up. And he really did a nice job with the overhaul. And they show classic films. But we have been showing Red State there. Kevin has been showing Red State there. And I've been stopping by from time to time to help out with the Q&A. And that's what we're doing on Sunday. Kevin's going to be there. He's going to show the movie. Then we're going to do a Q&A. Kevin's going to talk a little bit. Then I'm going to come on and help him out towards the end of it. But the cool thing is it's not only going to be here in Los Angeles, which it absolutely will be, which is Sunday at 4 p.m. at the New Beverly Cinema, but it's going to be shown via satellite around the country.
Oh,
so
wow.
There are theaters all over the country that will be showing the film, and then the Q&A simultaneously, as it happens, we'll be broadcasting that via satellite all over the country in movie theaters everywhere. So it's kind of a cool event that we're doing.
So they're broadcasting the Q&A after the screening, too. So people in Maine are going to be watching you guys up on stage taking questions from the audience.
Right. And if they have a question, they can tweet Kevin, and he'll be answering questions live via Twitter as the Q&A goes on. So we'll be taking questions from all over the place. I'll be kind of helping him out with that aspect of it. I'll be sort of moderating that end. I'll be reading the questions from Twitter, and he'll be answering. And it's a blast.
Idea.
Yeah, it is.
It is a great idea. Yeah. I will tell you, and I mentioned yesterday, Ralph, that over the weekend I bought the Red State. So I spent my $10.99.
Thank
and
you. Appreciate it.
You always accuse me of being cheap, but I did spend the $10.99, and I got it on DirecTV. And I loved this movie.
Wow, that's so
cool to hear. I loved this movie. Lisa May hated it. I loved this movie.
How dare you? Lisa and didn't tell me she hated it.
Oh, she hated it. Boy, did she hate it.
Oh, my God. That makes me feel bad.
I'm going to let her tell Kevin Smith that, who wrote it and directed it.
I wasn't actually going to tell anybody that.
Wow.
Oh, Lisa, come on. No, I'm telling you, I didn't know what to expect. Of course, I'd heard more about this movie than most just because you were in it, so I've been hearing about it since even before it came out, and of course, all the press leading up to it. I still didn't know what to expect, and I was still surprised at every level. First of all, Kevin Smith, who I think is best known as a writer still and as a personality and as a good director, I don't think he gets nearly the credit he deserves for being a great director, because I think this is it's a challenging movie for him to make, but I think this is the best directing I've ever seen him do.
Well, it's the least like anything he's ever done before, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Kevin will even joke himself, he's kind of known for putting two people in a frame and then letting them talk. You know, that's kind of how he directs.
Right.
But this thing, the camera is moving all over the place in this film.
And he definitely, and the editing is, and I know he did the editing himself too. The editing is phenomenal because you guys ratchet up the terror. And I don't want to give too much away about it, but I mean, these guys basically think they're going into one thing, end up going into another thing, and are essentially kidnapped, tortured, and killed in some cases, some of the guys. And every step along that way, it's very believable and frightening. I mean, so frightening. And these people, and I know this is what makes great villains sometimes, are not the ones who are Darth Vader 100% all evil, but the ones who are super nice, quiet, gentle, likable people, but have black hearts.
Yeah.
And those are the people that are frightening, the most frightening, I think. And this movie is just filled with guys like that. I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I had no idea the second half of the movie once the great John Goodman gets involved in. Man, how much weight has that dude lost?
Yeah. A ton. He's almost unrecognizable.
He looks fantastic. He's still a terrific actor, but yeah. I mean, that whole scene of the interactions that he has with the government and the kind of way that whole thing plays out, I mean, was like another movie, but was equally fascinating to me. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, speaking for Kevin, if I can, because he's not here. That was sort of one of his goals. I know when you see the film, and I hope folks will, it becomes a different movie along the way. It's very much one kind of movie in the beginning, and then even in the middle of the film, it takes a turn. And then at the end, as you mentioned, when John Goodman's character comes in, it's a completely different kind of film. But it is tense, to say the least, and there is a lot of very frightening situations. And I think you're right, Bean. I think one of the reasons it's so frightening is because they're very relatable situations. It's not one of those horror films where, you know, it's about werewolves and vampires and stuff. These monsters walk amongst us in real life.
Hey, who hasn't answered a Craigslist ad for some sex? You know what I mean?
Tell me about it.
Who knows what's going to happen when you show up? But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And by the way, can I say anything about what happens to your character, Ralph, or is that best left to?
I think it's been discussed.
Yeah, we've discussed
before.
It. It's no secret.
Yeah.
The dream of I'm not an actor, but I think the dream of most actors is they want to run down a hall carrying a gun and they want to have a death scene. And you got to do both of those things in this film. But how fun is that? I mean, that's different than anything you've ever done, right?
I've said to Smith before, he is the expediter of my dreams in a lot of ways from when I was a little kid. Because when you're running around playing cops and robbers, or army or whatever, and you're bang bang shooting each other and falling over and playing out those death scenes as a kid. When you're an actor, there's still a big part of you that wants to fulfill those dreams. And that's why a lot of people become actors, because they want to play Let's Pretend. And so he gave me the chance. I did get my chance to carry a gun and have my Dirty Harry moment where I kick in a door. and you do get to play the death scenes and stuff. And it was just a blast. As tense and as disturbing and as dark as the film is, it was just as much fun and happy and joyful to shoot, which may be hard to explain to some people, that we had such a good time doing it, and the end result was so sort of creepy and dark. And here's the director, Kevin Smith, now.
I was spellbound. I almost didn't want to come in because I've been listening to the conversation. I'm like, finally, a serious discussion of my work on King Rock. How is everybody doing this morning?
Did you show up on time at your movie, Kevin, when you were making the movie? Did you show up every day on time?
As Ralph will attest to, no. There was that when they're wheeling you through the subterranean chapel where the boys have been bound and gagged. Am I selling the movie?
Yes.
Ralph at one point is, we're following Ralph through a shot. I wasn't even there for it.
No.
I saw that footage at night. I was like, this looked good. Sometimes, it's a collaborative process. I've learned after nearly 20 years of directing that it's best not to be up in everybody's kitchen. Leave people space. When you allow them to create their portion of the movie, they're going to work way, way harder because they're like, oh, I'm responsible for this now. It's different if I'm like, hey, this is my vision. Execute it. If I turn to them and be like, what do you want to do? What would you do if it was your movie? And you give that much opening to somebody, most cats go for it, man, and really fill the space. Ralph did that when I gave him the script. There was a line or two in the script that he goes, you know what, man, why don't you just rake out the lines and make me silent? And I was like, yes! You know, it's like people bring something to it that maybe you didn't see.
We have to give credit, while we're talking about what you were impressed by in the film, besides Kevin's direction, David Klein, the guy who was our
hell of a shooter.
Director of photography.
That's the guy, you look at that movie, that's the dude that shot Clerks. Like, if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will.
Wow.
That dude, almost 20 years ago, made that movie, which most people go, oh, it's fun, but it looks like crap. And Red State is like 180 degrees away from it.
Yeah. I can't tell you how jealous we all are that you were able to work with Ralph where he couldn't talk, though. I mean, it's like our dream. Sir.
That is a nightmare for me. When I normally work with Ralph, I'm sitting beside him, and I need him to talk. Otherwise, I'd be carrying the show, and I'm not that
right.
funny. So, I love talky Ralph.
We need to take a break. Kevin Smith is finally here. We'll talk some more about Red State and other stuff going on. We also have free stuff to give away. Kevin Smith has new product. I know it's hard to believe, but something new from Kevin Smith that you're going to want to own. And we'll talk all about that when we return right here on the Kevin DeBee Show. Dear Kevin DeBee, this email begins, "Hey, now I want to see the movie. Thanks for talking about it. Up until now, I thought Red State was a political movie," says M. It is not. There's no politics in the film at all, right, Kevin Smith?
Not really, man. I mean, well, there's the I guess it's got quote-unquote liberal politics in as much as maybe the one of the overriding messages of the movie is, please don't kill gay people.
You crazy liberal.
I know. I don't want to go out there too far. But other than that, I mean, the whole movie is I don't really think of it as a film. That's why it didn't bug me when I heard that Lisa hated it. It occurs to me more as, and this is kind of what it was designed to be, more of a parlor trick than it doesn't have a three-act structure. Some people are like, I don't know the characters enough. People keep getting killed. It's kind of the point. The movie's designed to frustrate and engage you on every level at every given moment of the movie. Most movies just kind of like walk through and you can kind of see where everything coming from a mile away. And when I sat down to write this, I was like, okay, whenever I know where it's going, the audience knows where it's going. And that's terrible. So in order to, not terrible, I mean, look, we're used to that. Sometimes you go to the movies looking for comfort of like, hey man, I just want to see the X-Men win again. but sometimes like you can play the audience against itself, knowing what the audience expects, being an audience member, number one, number two, being able to, having made a flick a few times or enough, like, or having 20 years of practice enough to be like, okay, I know I've watched enough movies, I've made enough movies. You can move this over here, and suddenly it creates a whole new reality that people think is where you're heading, and then you go right. So every time I was sitting there going, anywhere I know where the movie is heading, just jump and create a different movie and start a different thread. So it begins with the boys as a weird kind of horror movie where they want to go off into the woods and get laid, and then it becomes this dark hate meditation, like listening to Michael Parks just pretty much write himself an Oscar ticket as he just spills like what is a kind of a bouquet of hate speak, and suddenly the movie just literally stops for this tour de force performance, and you're listening to the stuff the guy's saying, your mind is bent, but at the same time you're like, this dude's who is this man? The whole time you're almost taken out of the movie going like, who is this actor? Like, he's amazing. Then suddenly you jump back into another movie where it's an escape film, then it turns into a movie of government, like church versus state. The ATF shows up. It is all over the place. The movie's designed to make sure that you can never go meh. You either love this movie or you hate this movie, but you never go like, yeah, I saw something like it the other day.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. You definitely did.
It's sometimes you just gotta like make something artistic, something original. Like, and believe me, I've made my fair share of movies where, you know, Zach and Miri, you know what's going to happen. They're going to fall in love.
They're going to make a porno.
It's right there in that title. We didn't bury the lead. You can kind of see where they're going. But sometimes, like, for me, I got into this business. How I started making flicks in the first place was Clerks, which was a movie where people were like, I'd never seen anything like it before. I didn't know where it was going, what was happening. And I was able to sustain that kind of energy for the first few films of my career, probably right up till Dogma, including Dogma. And then after that, I just go into career management mode where I'm like, you know what? What's going to get greenlit?
Yeah.
Or what do people want to see? Or can I blend my sensibility to something that's commercial? Like, that's what I did in the middle. Tried to figure out if I could take my quote-unquote view askew and put it into the movie business and make it profitable for somebody so that I could continue going. And that worked for a little while, and I don't think the results were always as strong as they could have been, and any critic will agree with me, I'm sure. And then, you know, I sat there going, okay, I don't have any more stories to tell. If that's what I'm doing, if I'm career managing, then I don't have the fire in the belly, and that means I shouldn't be doing this.
I was going to say, was that an unfulfilling period for
you? Yeah, well, not unfulfilling, but you just go like, well, this is my life now. Like,
it becomes your job.
It becomes your job. It goes from like, I'll kill or die to make a movie to like, I get paid to make movies. This is what I do. And that's great, but it's when your art marries with your job, when your art and commerce blend, it's a tough balancing act. You can't serve two masters, right? So I figured out after 20 years, you don't have to serve either. You don't work for anybody as long as you work for the audience. So for me, I'm like, that's where I am at this point. Like, I can't think about, is this movie going to make money for somebody? And I can't think about, am I being artistic enough? All I have to think about is like, what would my audience like? And what I know is my audience likes me to just try stuff. Like, that's what they've kind of communicated all this time. And after a stretch in there where I wasn't trying anything, I was kind of blending or adapting and being more like, you know, I'll do what everybody else does. That's how you stay in this business. Then I was like, well, that's the problem. The problem is I'm trying to stay in this business. Mm-hmm. And it is a business. And if I'm trying to stay, it's the work's never going to be as strong as it was in the beginning. So I, Zach Amir, I figured this out. I was like, oh, my God, I'm doing myself, doing somebody else, doing myself. Like, I don't have an original thing to say anymore. Now I'm just kind of regurgitating. So I was like, this is not how I want to go out. I don't want to, like, just slowly slide into, like, oh, yeah, he made Mighty Ducks 8, didn't he? You know, started with Clerks. It was amazing. And then Mighty Ducks, he just does those movies now. And for a while, I was getting that. A lot of people, like, I got my own category, my own genre. Like, he just makes Kevin Smith movies. And that's great. That's amazing because I got to create my own subgenre. But at the same time, that's easy to dismiss. People go, oh, he just does that thing. So in order to kind of finish as strongly as I started, I felt like I want to go out making art again. And in order to make art, you can't care about anything. Like, the beautiful thing about Clerks and Chasing Amy, I didn't make those movies going, what are people going to say? Or what are people going to think? Or what's this going to mean for my career? You just made them because you could not help but make them. It was the fire in the belly. And now Red State and the next movie hit somebody. That's where I'm. Even Cop Out. Some people didn't quite understand that. They're like, Cop Out? I'm like, yes. Like, Cop Out is a movie that takes me away from my comfort zone. And also, Cop Out, like, I can't say this enough. Without Cop Out, there's no Red State. Literally, one of our financiers looked me in the eye and go, without reading the script, was just like, I saw your name next to Bruce Willis's name in a movie. So you must be in the movie business. And he wrote me a very large check that financed Red State. So everything gets connected and stuff, even though people are like, oh, Cop Out's an abortion. I'm like, great. It's the abortion that gave birth to Red State. People are like, that's gross. And I'm like, yes, yes, that's how I sell the movie. Yes.
Do you guys remember how long ago I asked Kevin a question? I mean, can you think back? I mean, is there a time?
I'm trying to make
that
up
was
for...
an inspiring speech. It really was.
Did it make you like Red State a little more?
A little more.
See? Yes. See? That's why it helps to have me in the room, man. Like, this Sunday. You can see
well, let me
give, at least it makes a little more sense to
Thank
me.
Let me give out all the information because, as usual, we're running out of time here. Red State is the film that is available on demand now. I saw it on DirecTV, but it's on all sorts of cable and satellite platforms. You can get it on DVD and Blu-ray in October on the 18th. And the event that Kevin and Ralph are speaking about is happening this Sunday. If you're in Los Angeles, the New Beverly Cinema at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon. You guys are going to be showing the movie and having one of your famous Q&As. And you can buy tickets for that at coopersdell.com. I really do recommend this movie, kids. Don't listen to Lisa. She's way wrong.
Yeah. And, she's a girl. What does she know?
I know.
She's a girl.
We love that. What we love about art is you can't have consensus. So when I was driving in, I hear Bean going, oh, I love it. And then I hear Bean going, Lisa hates it. I was like, beautiful.
That's what you're going for.
That creates discussion.
At least you're having emotional response.
Exactly. You're having a response to it, not just like, oh, I saw your movie. Well done.
It was there in a theater. I sure saw it.
Yeah.
All right.
It happened.
Ralph and Kevin have the showbiz people when we come back, but we leave you with a treat. 1-800-520-1067. Kevin, we don't have time for you to describe what it is, so I'll just say Too Fat for 40 is the latest special deluxe edition on DVD from Kevin Smith. It also includes your Smodimation Season 1 and a bonus DVD, and I didn't even know this thing existed, of Hollywood Babylon.
Isn't that amazing? I saw
How about that?
It's a disc of me and Ralph doing the show, which people never see. They hear, but they never see it. Yeah. The good folks at Shout Factory, they were like, can we put it in there? I said, yes. So it's in that box set.
You can go to ShoutFactoryStore.com to buy your copy or call right now. We've got three winners right now. 1-800-520-1067. Showbiz Beat next on The Kevin and Bean Show.
Just sounds like crap.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
K-Rock.
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 Jason Statham joins us after the top of the hour.
Yeah, I'll be talking to you right after the top of the hour. That's right.
Wow, you're on the Kevin and Bean Show.
That's good. Thanks.
Hey, if he flakes, Ralph, you can run in the other room and jump on the phone. Right now, Ralph is here with our friend Kevin Smith. Time for a look at the Showbiz Beat on a Friday. What's going on?
We were having a conversation last break talking about what you expect when you get into your career into show business and what you don't. And Matt Damon,
buddy of Kevin's, he's worked with him a couple times.
Hell of an American icon.
He's a good dude. He's a great actor.
Good head on his shoulders. All about his craft, but also all about his family. Good dude. Yeah. A centered good dude.
He said when he got into acting, he never imagined he'd be making out with Michael Douglas. Well, who amongst us has, really?
That's not even hot. I don't want to see him make out with Michael Douglas.
It's hilarious.
See him make out with a dude, but not... I thought if I was... Ben, you'd imagine if anyone was going to make out with...
Yes, right? Yes. You know they've done it in private.
But put it on wax, is what I'm saying. But him and Michael Douglas, I ain't looking forward to. But I am looking forward to this movie. This is a Liberace picture?
That's what I'm talking about. Liberace, directed by Steven Soderbergh. It's the life and times of Liberace. And I bet you there's a whole group of our audience who has no idea idea who Liberace is.
I wish my brother George was here.
He was a flamboyant piano player who was a TV star for playing piano on television. Had a hit TV show.
And was very gay. Everyone knew he was gay, except nobody had a name for it, really.
Yeah, they used to call him a bachelor, I think.
Yes.
That's
like,
that was the name
like
for
your grandmother loved Liberace and would sit there with you watching this man play the piano. And he wore costumes, essentially, like very big, like, you know, kind of took the Elton John thing and took it even further in just being very colorful, flamboyant. But this movie, look, in the hands of a director like Steven Soderbergh, movie, that's what I want to see. A Steven Soderbergh Liberace picture, I'm so there. I'm just giving you my money now.
Yeah.
You. And you hold on to it. We could buy tickets later.
Yeah. Liberace, of course, passed away of AIDS. And Michael Douglas, this is his big comeback role since he beat cancer. So should be an interesting film.
Bucket of win. Big bucket of win.
These are my kind of guys. Apparently, there are four guys in England who modified a car to look just like the Black Pearl from Pirates of the Caribbean. And they are driving it across Europe.
A car? They modified a car.
They have taken a car, Lisa, and they have modified it to look like the Black Pearl. They are dressed as pirates, and they are driving that car across Europe.
Because
they can.
All right.
Healthy. I like that.
They were pulled over in Germany this week.
Not good on the Autobahn.
Cops in Germany pulled them over, and they insisted on taking the ship car in for a complete safety inspection, and it passed. So the German police begrudgingly had to give them their licenses back and send them back on the open seas of the highways across Europe.
We'll see ye again in Davy Jones' locker.
Release the Kraken.
Kraken.
Nutty enough.
That's so cute, man. Anything that keeps them off a bell tower with a sniper rifle, I'm all for it. If they want to dress up like pirates and ride around in a car, that means they're not killing people. I'm all for it.
And Leonardo DiCaprio has a Leonardo DiCaprio impersonator working for him.
What do you mean?
This is why you know you're a star. He's in Australia right now. He's on vacation in Sydney, and he wants to enjoy the sights.
Yes.
So he has a impersonator with him that he is sending out in public places to attract attention while he sneaks away and goes off and sees the tourist stuff.
Huh. Get out of here.
He's got his own impersonator. That's when you're a movie star, when you have your own impersonator.
Or a
dictator. One of the two.
If you go to Comic-Con, man, there's a lot of me's out there.
You should hire one of those guys.
Totally.
Throw him in a jersey.
You're my guy.
Send him to work.
That is the idea. I could put him in a jersey as long as all he has to do is just eat and not shave for a while. Wear one of my jerseys. I push him out there and like, there goes that fat guy who made Clark's. And people are like, where?
Get him.
I put on like a Boston Bruins jersey. I disappear into
the Maybe not a hockey jersey. Maybe another kind of clothing. Right, maybe like a suit.
He would have to shop.
That's true.
A tuxedo
if I really want
to
disappear, yeah. Like suddenly I take off the hockey jersey. I'm wearing tails.
That's right.
I start doing a tap dance and people just look the other way. Can't be him.
Kevin Smith, when was the last time you wore a suit?
My father's funeral. Thanks for bringing the day down, dude.
How many years ago?
My dad died. I feel like Batman. My dad died.
How many years ago?
7 years ago, sir.
Isn't that something? You're in an industry where you never have to put on even a collared shirt if you don't want to. God bless you.
I'm telling you, it's the American dream. That's the American dream. People are like, no, being rich and all this. No. Having a job where you don't have to wear anything but what you want to wear. Sometimes nothing. Naked. You've seen me do a job naked, bro.
Yeah, sadly I have.
So that's how your podcast happens.
I worry about the podcast with your wife. It's only a matter of time before you guys have sex on mic.
Oh, God. He's
working for it. She won't go.
She's just like, you're out of your mind. I'm like, when we run out of steam, that'll be like our second boost. Like,
save that for sweeps weeks.
That's true.
For the ratings. Today's celebrity birthdays, legendary icon Mickey Rooney. He's been in the movie business his whole life. 91 years old.
He will be missed. Oh, he's
alive? No, he's still alive. Yeah.
Wow.
He was the Tinseltown Stiffs.
Whoa.
Wasn't he a huge star like in the 1930s,
yes.
Ralph?
Yes.
Astonishing.
He was the number one box office star in the world.
Bruce Springsteen, the Boss, celebrates his 62nd birthday.
I find that hard to believe, and then it makes me go, I guess, I'm 41. He's got to be. He had years on me, right?
Yep.
I was listening to those albums when I was a kid, so wow.
Yeah.
He looks good, though, for 62.
He sure does. He can still rock.
Jason Alexander from Seinfeld is 52. Chi McBride from Pushing Daisies and Human Target, Boston Public, 50 years old. Andy DeFranco's 41. And outfielder for the L.A. Dodgers, having an MVP season this year, Matt Kemp celebrates his 27th birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
The world-famous K-Rock.
It sounds like somebody is in my ear.
Hey!
It's
a
Kevin and Bean Show.
Kevin Smith is here and offered to stick around because we're talking to Jason Statham about his new film, Killer Elite, in theaters today. And Kevin, is this true as we bring Jason up to the show? You guys are neighbors?
Yeah, I believe he lives in my near me. I don't want to, you know, tip it in case he's like, oi, don't tell people I live near you. Because, you know, I'm pretty, that's Australian. I shouldn't be doing accents when the dude's about to get on the phone. Yeah, I better stop that.
Jason, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I don't know if you heard as we brought you on, but your neighbor Kevin Smith is here in the studio with us.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm very well.
Jason, I'm a huge fan, and this is what I always think about whenever I see you pop up in a movie. I'm like, that dude was one part of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And if somebody had to, like, lay bets on who was going to pop and pop huge, I don't think anyone would have said Jason. Every time I see him headline a movie, I'm like, that's amazing. That just proves that, like, you can be that guy. Like, this dude literally is a movie star. Yeah. And he started as one part of, like, a quartet, a really strong quartet. But and then he just really put himself out there and really just stood apart from everybody else. So congratulations, sir. Every time I see you, I'm just like, yeah, one of us made it, even though he's impossibly beautiful. So not really
and
one of us.
Nothing like you at all.
Nothing like me at all.
Or me, really.
Totally. But it's still, it's huge. I love him.
Thanks very much, gents.
Are you in Australia or something right now, Jason?
I'm actually in Florida. We're shooting a film with Taylor Hackford and Jennifer Lopez, and we're down in Palm Beach.
Okay. Yeah, it's so weird. The life of a movie star where you're off on set with Jennifer Lopez, and now you've got to take yourself back to a year where you made Killer Elite. But not too shabby a cast in that film either, huh?
Yeah, we got a great cast. It's not often you get to work with Robert De Niro and Clive Owen. So, yeah, the man himself. So, very, very lucky.
You seem to be about the right age to have grown up idolizing Robert De Niro. Is that accurate?
It certainly is, yeah. Raging Bull, Goodfellas. I mean, there's a shopping list of brilliant films he's been in.
And how did you find him personally? Was it easy to just be friends with a dude that you had looked up to so much?
Exactly. It was very easy. He's a very laid-back guy.
And of course, Clive Owen, as you mentioned, who is one of the most exceptional actors, and honestly, one of the guys who has the nerve to put a mustache like that up on a screen in 2011. I give him all the credit in the world for that decision.
Exactly, it's a period film, so, you know, Gary McKenzie, the director of the movie, he wanted to keep it a period piece. So, you know, it's every time you make a movie that's an adaptation from a book, you know, you have the license to do many things with it, but he wanted to keep it true to its own because it's based on actual true events that was witnessed way back by Sir Ranulph Fiennes when he was serving in the SAS, so he wanted to keep it authentic. So,
wow.
Yeah, mustaches.
Of course, yeah. You are a guy who has been famous for doing so many of your own stunts over the years, and not that you're old by any stretch of the imagination, but are you starting to feel it at all in your body, Jason?
Oh, it's going to wear out soon enough, yeah. One of those things.
That's a bummer, huh? Do all that work.
Jason, I was just in London, man, and you were on the side of every double-decker bus I saw for the Killer Elite, so it must be opening worldwide, or maybe it must be open the same time. That's kind of sweet, man.
Yeah, it's great when that happens, you know?
Yeah, right? All at once. Is it still? Does it still catch you off guard when you see yourself on the side of a bus like back in England? Because that's got to be, you grow up seeing buses there all the time. Suddenly, there's a bus with your face on it. Does it weird you out?
You know what it is? I never get a chance to go and see. If my face is on the side of a bus, I never see it because I'm always somewhere else doing it, either working or, you know, I spend a lot of time in Los Angeles now, so it's not too often I get back home, and so I'll never get to see my ugly mug on the side of a red bus.
Ugly mug, he says. Killer Elite is the name of the movie. I think we have a clip from the trailer here that'll show you that it is fairly high octane. I think you'll enjoy it. Listen up.
It killed Craig and Harris.
We have to do something.
Close it down.
You have no idea who you're messing with.
Did you hear this number?
He's like a father to you, right?
You don't do this as a dead man.
Listen, Danny's gonna come back for me. When he does, you're out of here. He's your worst nightmare.
This ends today.
War isn't over till both sides say yes.
Isn't it sinister, Kevin, when Jason talks, he's never a guy who yells at you. He's a guy who just has such confidence when he delivers that line, kind of under his breath a little bit. It says, chills up your spine.
It does. And he's also one of the few guys that gets to rock his own accent in movies. Most people, they're always like, you sound something like somebody else. But him, they're like, go ahead, sound like you.
B. Jason Statham, right. The film looks terrific. It opens everywhere today. It is called Killer Elite. Hey, have fun with J-Lo in Florida, and thank you for coming on the line today. We appreciate it.
Great stuff. Thanks for having me on.
I don't like it.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
I don't like it at all.
In a world, someone has been watching. One man who risked everything.
I'm sorry, I have not seen any of your films.
Without seeing the movies. Ralph Garman's Movie Beat. Welcome to my world.
That's right, boys and girls. Anyone can see a film and review it. I'm the only reviewer that I know of that reviews films without having never seen them.
Well, there's the blind guy we talk to from time to time.
But he even listens. He listens to the movie. I don't even do that. I review from a distance.
So really, no one could work less and review a movie.
You know what, Lisa? I don't like your tone today. I don't like your your attitude, and I don't like you today.
Clarification. That's all.
Let's get into it because there's a lot of movies in the Cineplexes this week, and starting with Dolphin Tale.
Oh, I want in.
You really?
Oh yeah.
You want to see Morgan Freeman build a fake tail for a dolphin?
Oh, that's what it's about.
Yeah, yes. That's what it is.
Oh, yes. Yeah, call it, that dolphin tail is a euphemism for something else from where I come from.
Oh, I see. You thought it was a sex position. I got you.
Story of a young boy who befriends a dolphin who lost her tail in a crab trap. This is a true story, people.
This sounds unwatchable.
Dolphin lost her tail, and so Morgan Freeman builds a new tail for the dolphin.
I do want to see this. I've been seeing the billboards up and down at Sunset for this for like a month, and my kid was explaining the movie to me. I literally almost hit another car in traffic crying. It was so beautiful. I was like, they built the dolphin a tail?
It's just a prosthetic tail.
Almost ran an SUV off
the road. They saved its life, Ralph.
They did, whatever.
Ralph. Come on, imagine you're a dolphin. That's all you got in life is a blowhole and a tail.
Right.
You lose one. No, you're still pretty useful.
Just feed him. Just feed him the fish in the tank. Where's he going?
Bionic dolphin.
While he lays there on the bottom.
Yeah. Get him some.
He don't move much.
Get him some floaties.
So like, you know, he's got to come up for air.
You know what we
air.
Do for the baby in the pool? We put the little water wings on her, and she's good to go.
All right, but if you put water wings on a dolphin's lack of tail, then that end is up, and its blowhole is underwater.
Well,
it's drowning.
Then you give him a collar too. I don't know. I'd work it out.
Get him a scuba tank. Moving on.
Here's a scene from the movie. Here's Morgan Freeman himself talking about his prosthetic dolphin tail.
How would you keep the daggone thing on? I mean, there's nothing there. There's nothing to attach anything to. It's preposterous anyway, trying to put a tail on a fish. And nobody in his right mind would even try it. Luckily, I'm not.
Not what?
In my right mind.
You're gonna try?
Dr. McCarthy! I mean, she likes you.
Well, imagine my delight.
That sounded so dirty. Dr. McCarthy! And then big splash.
Why is Hoke from Driving Miss Daisy going to build a tail for a dolphin? I don't understand. Like, couldn't Morgan come up with a different performance?
Why are you going to put a tail on a dolphin anyway? You can't keep nothing on there, Kingfisher.
Whoa. It takes. No, you got to do. This is my. Do your best, Morgan Freeman.
There's not even a way to keep the tail on a dolphin.
All right, let me try mine.
Okay.
There's. Listen to me, Batman. No, I can't do it. I'm not good like you. I can't do it.
People buying things with Visa.
Does he say that in this movie?
No, I don't think he does. Just in the commercials.
I want to see this movie, man. Anytime they take a dolphin, because it's not a fish, and he incorrectly calls it a fish.
That's
which
right. Right away. With Visa.
Right away.
People buy dolphins with Visa.
Oh, that's good, man. You can't let this dude operate on a dolphin if he keeps calling it a fish.
That's
he
right.
Even
get
know
a better
what species
doctor.
He's working
he's probably
on.
Not even a real doctor. This doctor
but I'm
Ken
in.
McCarthy.
I want to see this. I can't wait to cry. I'm going to get really high watch this movie and bawl like a baby. I'm like, life is beautiful and for the living.
I'm going to cry when I watch Abduction because they're making Taylor Lautner into an action star.
He is, man.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, he's got muscles from Brussels, man.
Does.
He does. He's built for an action movie.
He's fine until he opens his mouth, and that's what blows the whole fantasy for
Why?
Me.
Why? What does he say?
Because the way he sounds. Like,
we're going to find you. Not if I find you first.
Is that what he sounds like?
Yes. Here's a clip where Taylor Lautner finds out what he's gotten into.
Listen, kid. The world you've just been dropped into is a world very few people get to see. What we're engaged in here is a polite war.
This thing that Kozla wants so badly. What is it?
It's an encrypted list of 25 people who have sold or traded state secrets.
Your name's on that list.
Your
isn't
name's
it?
On that list, isn't it?
You have a vivid imagination.
It sounds
it's a very dangerous thing.
You got Alfred Molina there, Mr. Gravitas himself. They're like, your name's on that list, isn't it? I'm going to find you guys. You're going to be in some trouble because I'm a wolf.
Sounds like a kid in Nebraska took a clip from a movie and then cut himself into it.
Exactly.
To talk
problem.
To the villain.
Let's skip the next clip there, Muggs, and move on to Killer Elite. You guys were just talking to Jason Statham.
I'm not sure.
Such as riveting stuff, by the way, fellas. Well done.
We're cutting it out of the podcast, so only the people listening were able to hear it.
Robert De Niro also stars in the film. Here's a scene where De Niro fends off an attacker barehanded. That's all you need to know about that movie. That's all. That's De Niro kicking the crap out of a guy.
That can literally be a clip from the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sounds silly when you put it on the radio.
Do you think anybody out there is like, oh, no, that sounds good.
Oh, I'm going to get that.
I want to see that. It sounds like punches and breaking glass. Like, I want to see that.
Moneyball, Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill.
Oh, this movie's hot.
True story about Billy Beane, general manager for the Oakland A's, who puts together a baseball team using a computer for the first time ever. And Jonah Hill is his computer analyst who helps them build a team on a budget. And also get the best players for the job.
What this movie's about?
Yeah.
It sounds sexier. Moneyballs.
How have you missed that, Kevin?
Moneyballs.
Moneyballs.
No?
That's in the back of the DVR section. This is Moneyball.
Oh, it's singular, not plural.
That's right.
All right.
Here's Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill.
Were you moving fast?
Yeah. I got here early this morning.
Wow.
Hey, Billy. I wanted you to see these player evaluations that you asked me to do.
I asked you to do three.
Yeah.
To evaluate three players?
Yeah.
How many did you do?
47.
Okay.
Actually, 51. I don't know why I lied just then.
He's really good.
These two guys together, that should be a fun movie to watch. And lastly, in selected theaters, Red State. The movie's called Red State. It's at the New Beverly this weekend, and you can see it all around the country if you're in a theater that's got a satellite hookup.
Go to coopersdell.com to find a theater near you.
Here's a little scene from Red State in which Aben Cooper, the preacher in the film, played by Michael Parks, talks about the people that God loves.
God loves you. God loves everybody. But a God that drowned the entire world except you knowing it's like sound like a God that loves you.
No.
That sound like a God that forgives your sins?
No, sir.
Your carnal desires?
No. That's not God's love.
That's a God that abhors the wicked. And who's Satan's instrument on earth, if you know what I mean?
The homosexuals.
That's right, baby.
That's right. The homosexuals. Whoa.
That's chilling.
He's a bad dude.
I wish he would have been like, and here's a clip from Dolphin Tale and played that. People have been like, I can't bring my kid to Dolphin Tale.
God's instrument of hate, dolphins.
It's going to be a whole different film. Check it out. Also in video on demand, Kevin Smith, the director, has been with us. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thanks for having me, guys. Love being here.
Sitting in, I'm Ralph.
Kevin, sitting in for Kevin, if you will.
That's right. Yeah. Ralph Garman, I walk the movie beat.
I'll let you know is at an end.
That was Ralph Garman.
Ralph Garman.
Movie Beat. The Kevin and Bean Show.
K-R-O-Q. A little music, please.
That music you must recognize by now is from The Amazing Race, debuting with another new season this Sunday night at 8 on CBS. I can't believe it. Phil Kogan on the phone with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show. How many seasons are we into now, buddy?
19 shot, 20 we're already planning on right now.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. No idea.
And did I see you on stage yet again last Sunday night at the Emmys picking up another statue?
You did, and it's a miracle. I mean, when we lost it last year to Top Chef, I did not think that we would be coming back again, and winning this year again really felt like the first time.
I will say, and I know a lot of people are down on reality shows, but there are a few programs like yours that are such a cut above. And how do you not reward a program that is so extraordinarily difficult to make? I mean, every aspect of that show, I mean, literally physically just doing the show and filming the show is impossible. But then all of the editing and all of the competition and all the things, it seems like you always have like 400 plates in the air when you guys are making that program.
Well, I do really think that we have a distinct advantage over so many other shows because of exactly what you're talking about, the idea that people come together and collaborate on making something that takes place on a global scale where you're working in countries like Bangladesh or this season we're going to Indonesia, where there's inherent challenges of going to a place like that because you've got to take all your equipment there and you've got to take, you know, set elements there, and you're working in foreign countries with different cultures and different languages. To execute that is just such a different beast from, say, making a show that's shot in a studio in the valley. I mean, it's a totally different type of show to work on.
No, you're absolutely 100% right, Phil. I mean, I think there would be challenges in you taking your family to Indonesia for 2 weeks on vacation, much less taking a crew of probably 100 people with everything else and all the contestants, you know?
You've got that absolutely right. I mean, and trust me, sometimes I feel like we're traveling with some children because, you know, we have our own challenges on a personal level with moving around. You know, we all get tired. We miss out on food, and it's the whole show is shot. The whole season is shot in 23 days, 12 episodes in 23 days, which is less than two shows per episode. And you know, the biggest challenge for us is just trying to keep tabs of the information, because we're so spread out, sometimes over a few countries, that we're trying to gather information about what's going on. So when I do those interviews with the teams, I'm meant to be fully prepped and fully versed on exactly what's happened, so I can ask, you know, questions about what's going on. And the only way I can do that is I'm at the pit stops, frantically making calls, trying to get information, as much information as I can, because it's all happening as live. And you know, cell services go down some places where we don't have cell service, so we're on satellite phones, or we're trying to relay information via radios. It's inherently challenging just getting information.
Do you ever wish they'd incorporate a rose ceremony into the elimination?
Yes, I really would. I feel that it would add a lot. You know, something like, would you accept this rose?
I've always thought, Phil, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to have this idea, that the most awesome way to eliminate would be to leave the person in whatever country they're in. Let them find their own way home.
With no money?
Yeah. I'm sorry to tell you, you have to find your own way home.
Yeah, exactly. That would be so awesome. All right, as we've spoken with you in the past, and this is the voice of our friend Phil Kogan here on the Kevin and Bean Show, The Amazing Race, new season Sunday night on CBS. We've talked about this in the past. You give all the credit to the casting director. You guys do a brilliant job of finding people that we don't even know it, but we're going to fall in love with 8 weeks down the road. Tell me about some of, without giving anything away, of course, because I know you won't, tell me about some of the exceptional people we're going to be seeing this season.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. A huge amount of credit has to go to the casting people for just identifying interesting people. And people always say to me, oh, you know, what do I have to do to get on that show? And the answer is, I really don't know, because you can't describe why somebody would love the Cowboys as much as they do, or the Globetrotters. And they're so, like, two teams like that are so inherently different. But on this particular season, on paper, we probably have the most competitive group that we've ever had. And Andy and Tommy, who are best friends, professional snowboarders, former Olympians. Amani and Marcus, where they're a married couple. He's an NFL player, retired player. Marcus Pollard, you know, scored something like 40 touchdowns, incredibly competitive, not a guy that you want to run into on a football field. Or Ethan and Jenna, who are both Survivor winners, who have competed separately, but now we've brought them together as a couple. And, of course, he's incredible story because of his surviving cancer. Or Lawrence and Zach, where you've got a father-son dynamic, where the son was the youngest person to ever sail around the world. So on paper, those teams are absolutely the most competitive group that we've had in one season. But let's not forget that on Amazing Race, a team like David and Mary, who have been on in the past, who are from Kentucky, can come out and compete against world-class athletes, and that's what makes this show work, is that you've got an so-called ordinary person sometimes competing against somebody who is recognized as an extraordinary athlete, and they can really compete.
No, you bring up an outstanding point, and you're right. That's always one of the happy surprises every season, are the people that in your mind you are writing off early as just
right.
being not up to the challenge, and then you
right.
can't believe how deeply some of these people dig in and how they find a competitive fire that I feel even surprises them sometimes that they're able to accomplish what they do.
You're absolutely right about that, and that's the key to this show. And I mean, when early on in early seasons, you know, we used to lay down some money, have our own little, you know, I don't know if CBS would approve of me doing this, but you know, we would throw out a couple of bucks and we would say, you know, who do we think is going to be into the final, and we were so wrong so many times that we just stopped doing it at about season 5 because we realized that we were absolutely pathetic at it. None of us were ever right. And then we realized, you know what? That's why this show works, because it is totally unpredictable. It's not like any other race where you can say, oh, well, this team should win because they've won the last few races that they've been in, and they're seeded, and they're expected to win. No, this is a show where young, old, short, tall, whatever it is, teams have proven that you cannot pick a winner on this race, and right up to the last minute, you'll be guessing.
Let me ask you one more question, Phil, and God, one day, please, when you come into the studio, bring your passport so we can marvel at how many stamps you have on there. But you go to, you mentioned Indonesia. I know you're also going through Europe this time around. You're going to Thailand. Tell me about going to Malawi, because that's one of those countries I don't know anything about except Madonna gets kids there, and it seems like it would be unbelievably poor, and it just must blow people's minds when you guys show up with your crew.
Well, you know, that's one of the great things about, I think, about this race, is that we never repeat ourselves wherever we go. We're always in a different place. We're never going back to the same studio, never going back to the same sort of location. We're in the real world. And a place like Malawi is just so completely and utterly different from any other place in the world. And when a team arrives there, they're completely taken back by this landlocked place, which exports an incredible amount of tobacco. Suddenly, they're put in the middle of the workings, the inner workings, if you like, of a foreign country. It's like taking somebody to another planet. It's that different when you go to a foreign land, and that's what really makes this show work. And Lake Malawi is sort of the, I guess it's really the. They're the heart of Malawi. It's the lifeblood of Malawi. So much happens from there. The world's biggest collection of freshwater fish is in Lake Malawi. Everything happens in and around this lake, and it's a landlocked nation. And what I love is when we can take people to a place like Malawi, and then we can have the teams participating in everyday chores or everyday jobs that people do in a country like that, where the teams are suddenly immersed in those things and really get an understanding of what it's like to be in a country like that.
Well, there's a reason they've won 8 out of the last 9 Emmys for Outstanding Reality Competition. The Amazing Race is back for an all-new season this Sunday night, September 25th at 8 on CBS. Phil, you know how inspirational you are to us and to your fans. It's always great to have you on the Kevin and Bean Show, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. And just a great piece of news. We just found out that The Ride, the film that I did, is going to be on Showtime. So we're looking forward to sharing that experience with people. And all the money's going to MS. So I really appreciate your support always. Thank you.
You bet.
Two names that go together.
Kevin and Bean.
Two names you know.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Once in a while, a worthwhile show to listen to. And we're very excited because it's been 2 weeks since we caught up with our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, Jonah Hill, back on the program right now. Hey, Jonah, how are you, man? Wow, that's a bizarre phone. Say that again. Say hello again.
Hey, guys, what's up?
There you go.
There we go. Yeah, it says you're on a walkie-talkie, but it's cool. I can hear you. You're very kind because we had you on a couple of weeks ago talking about your movie, The Sitter, which isn't out yet, and we asked you at that time, if there's any way you have a minute for us for Moneyball, please come on back. So I want to tip my hat to you and say thank you for making the time.
Are you crazy? I'm honored.
All right, we appreciate that. You've done a million interviews on Moneyball. I doubt there's very little I can ask you that you haven't already been asked. But, I mean, this looks like the kind of movie that you get into movies to make. I mean, it looks like it has everything, dude.
It's a dream. It's such a dream come true. It's crazy. I mean, you know, I've obviously done a lot of comedy films, and I'm really proud of all those movies. But I studied dramatic acting and comedic acting, and for this to be my first big drama coming out there, to be with Brad Pitt and me and Seth Seymour Hoffman and Aaron Sorkin, who wrote The Social Network, and Steve Zaillian, who wrote Schindler's List, wrote the script, and Michael Lewis's book, Moneyball, he wrote The Blind Side, and Bennett Miller directed Capote. It's just a laundry list of really talented dramatic film people, and to get to be among them is just really, really crazy.
Aaron Sorkin is my personal lord and savior, of course. I fell in love with him on Sports Night and then on to The West Wing and, you know, The American President and all the other movies, Social Network, you mentioned. I feel like I would be too intimidated to have a conversation with him. Is he a guy that you can talk to like a regular Joe?
Yeah, he's great. He kind of talks like his writing.
That's exactly why I'd be intimidated with him, because all of his characters on TV are so eloquent and so well-spoken that I feel like there's no way I even want to talk because I'll sound so stupid.
Well, I mean,
mean, honestly, I was just excited to get to say his words and Steve Zaillian's words, and it was really, I don't know, it was just an honor. I thought, you know, once they had given me the part, it was such a big part, and it's the second lead in the movie, I kind of just felt like I had to kick my nerves to the curb and just really focus on not blowing this opportunity for these people.
Yeah. How many friends of yours, Jonah, that are girls are now wanting to hang out with you a lot because you know Brad Pitt?
I wish it was just girls.
No.
Oh, really?
I guess a lot of guys probably have a guy crush on him, too.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that obviously is, you know, one of the biggest stars in the world. And I think because he is married to Angelina and because he is so pretty, I think a lot of people overlook what an unbelievably talented actor he is. I mean, he's been nominated for an Oscar before, but he is a great effing actor, right?
Seen this movie yet?
I haven't. No, I'm dying to go.
He's mind blowing with it, man. And he's so good. And because him and Angie had this famous thing, this publicized relationship. It's sometimes you lose how talented of an actor he is in the media. But I know people who love movies know that he is legit one of the best actors out there. I mean, the fact that he did Tree of Life and Moneyball in the same year, and they're both that good.
Yeah.
He's in a really great creative space right now, and I'm honored to, be a friend and gotten the chance to work with him.
And how about hanging out with him? Just a guy's guy? Just a regular, hang dude? Like, you can go...
You go on the press stuff, and everyone asks how your co-star, and you say, oh, he's the best, blah, blah, blah. Like, he really is the best. He's just a great guy, He's super fun to be around. He's not, some diva actor or anything like that. He's just a great guy. He's super fun and funny and talented and intelligent.
Yeah. This is the voice of our friend Jonah Hill here on the Kevin and Bean Show talking about Moneyball, which, by the way, I'm sure you've paid attention to the reviews. I think maybe, if not the best, certainly among the best reviewed films of 2011 so far. People are going berserk for this.
95% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
How about that? How about 95%? You don't see above 90 very often, that's for sure. And before we play a clip, from the movie, which I think is a great scene between you and Brad, this is your opportunity, Jonah, to tell people that are listening right now who are thinking, yeah, I like Brad Pitt, but I don't care about baseball. Tell them why they're wrong and they should still go see it.
I'm really happy to ask that question. That's awesome because, I've shown the movie to a lot of people who could care less about sports, let alone baseball specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, I never thought I was making a baseball movie or a sports movie. The truth is, baseball is just this beautiful aesthetic backdrop to this really, really moving story about underdogs being undervalued in the David versus Goliath type story. And it's really, really a special once in a career type of movie. And it's crazy how good it is.
Here's a clip from Moneyball opening everywhere today.
Your goal shouldn't be to buy players. Your goal should be to buy wins. And in order to buy wins, you need to buy runs.
Who are you?
I'm Peter Brand.
First job in baseball?
It's my first job anywhere.
We're going to shake things up. Why don't you walk me through the board?
I believe there's a championship team that we could afford because everyone else undervalues them, like an island of misfit toys.
You're discounting what scouts have done for 150 years? What the hell am I doing?
What is happening at Oakland?
If we win with this team, we'll change the game.
There it is. I mean, when the music swells, how can you not want to see that? All right, one more thing for you, Jonah. You have to definitively clear up some misconceptions. You were on one of the late night talk shows this week talking about a feud that you're apparently in with the dude from Glee. I don't really understand who said what to whom, but what's the deal?
No, it was totally. I was just being funny on Jimmy Fallon. I could care less. It was that Matthew Morrison from Glee was threw me under the bus at this Fox event, and then I heard him a couple weeks later say my name, and then him and this guy from Gossip Girl started laughing. So I just pretended to be really angry about it, but I could honestly care less. It's so funny. My publicist just told me it's in Us Weekly and all this stuff that we're feuding with each other.
Oh my gosh!
We could care less, and I'm sure
we're trying to get a celebrity boxing match together. We think that's the fight America wants to see. Come on!
I was just being funny on Fallon.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad we cleared that one up. Sorry to disappoint Us Weekly. Moneyball is the movie. As Jonah mentioned, everybody is loving this film. You look terrific in it. Brad Pitt, of course, in the great all-star pedigree with the director and the writer and the cast. It looks amazing. And we'll, no kidding, Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I guess we'll talk to you again in about 2 weeks for whatever the next one is, right, Jonah?
Cannot wait, you guys.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.
I love these guys.
Kevin and Bean.
They make funny with their mouths.
On K-Rock.
How about Cousin Sal? Jimmy's actual real-life Cousin Sal, who you can see on the Jimmy Kimmel Live Show. And, of course, you can read on Grantland.com, the awesome new Bill Simmons sports website. And, Sal, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
What's happening, fellas?
So I was on vacation last week. The monkey is gone this week. But I understand that you made our listeners potentially a ton of dough with your football picks last weekend.
I did. I figured it out. They made $750,000.
Is that how much it was?
They had to place like $3.5 million on each bet. But yeah, there was a lot to be made last week. 2-1 with my best bets. I think I went 9-6-1 overall against the spread. I would have hit double digits in wins if a guy who became a Cowboys wide receiver by winning a reality show had decided to praise Jesus Christ in the end zone instead of the 3-yard line. But that's okay. It's a winning week. So
yeah, that was a very, very bizarre end to a game. And I know Cowboys fans feel like they can't possibly stand any more than what they've been put through the last couple of seasons. Before we talk about this weekend, though, I have to ask your professional opinion. Why does it seem like everyone was wrong with these new changes that they made that were supposed to keep scores down? Why does it seem like there's more score now than ever before?
I think everyone was just full of crap, just the whole way through. I mean, they talked about offenses getting tired because they weren't in sync, because they didn't play the full preseason. But it's really the defenses who can't lift their hands in the air to block passes and everything. You see them struggling in the fourth quarter of every game, and that's where the points are coming from. But no one knows what they're talking about. You'll see as my interview goes on.
And everyone said that the teams that had the same teams coming back this season were going to be in a better shape than teams starting new players because of the lockout. And yet that hasn't been the case either. Some of these young quarterbacks or these rookies are just playing lights out.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And that's one of my featured games. I think you're talking about Cam Newton.
Yeah,
right?
I am. Yeah, I am.
He is something else. That's one of my guys. I love the Panthers over the Jaguars this week. If you've seen him play, I'm so impressed. He should not be this good this early. He's so poised. He makes no bad decisions. I'm ghost riding the whip of the Cam Newton bandwagon.
All right.
The Jaguars, on the other hand, they're struggling. They're debuting a rookie quarterback themselves, this guy Blaine Gabbert. He's good, but I don't think it works for him this week. The line is too low. I never thought I'd say this as an adult male, but the Carolina Panthers have too much firepower on offense. 28-16. Give the 3.5 points.
Yeah, I like Carolina at home, too. Who else do you like, Sal, this week?
All right, Chargers over the Chiefs. Now, the number is 14.5.
That's huge.
It seems like a lot of points, but the Chiefs have been outscored 89-10 in two games. 89-10, and by the Bills and the Lions. I mean, these are nice teams, but they're nothing special. I mean, who is going to counter the Chargers' pissed off juggernaut offense this week? Is it the Chiefs all-pro safety? That dude's out for the year. Maybe they could look for points from their budding young superstar tight end. That guy's knee is destroyed. What about their superstar running back? His season was cut short when he tore his ACL running into the Lions mascot. 89-10 plus the Lions mascot ruining your season. That is a loser team. Loser teams lose big. Take the Chargers minus 14.5 and around 38-13.
All right.
Okay. And I can't believe anyone's picking the Raiders to win any time, but you have reasons why you like them over the Jets.
I like it. First of all, the Jets are the luckiest effing team in the world. I can't stand it. So there might be a little bias here because they beat up on my Cowboys in week one. But this is my upset. They have a big problem on offensive line. This Nick Mangold, he's a stranglehold. He's banged up. The Raiders penetrate well on defense. They play tough-nosed defense. I'm not excited about the fact that they have trouble closing games. I think, though, it's because Al Davis, their owner, takes a nap in the fourth quarter, so the team lets up a little. But not this Sunday. They get it all together. Janikowski boots a bomb at the buzzer. The Raiders win 21-20. Take the Raiders +3.
All right.
Is there any kind of, I know this would be unprecedented, but is there any kind of a mercy rule that the NFL can impose and let the Colts just sit the rest of the season out?
It is sad, right? It really
yeah.
is.
It's not even entertaining.
I don't know. You think it's just Peyton Manning, right?
Well, I mean, apparently that seems to be the difference, isn't it? I mean, you know more than I do, but I mean, is the rest of the team relatively intact from years past?
No, it should be. Here's one thing I will say. Their strength on defense, because it shouldn't matter defensively, right? If he's running practice, that's great. But defensively, they should still be a sound unit. But their strength, we're finding out, was the pass rush.
Yeah.
And these teams are getting ahead so much, so early, they don't need to pass. So, like, that pass rush is nullified, and they are just a crap team top to bottom.
You know, Sal, you mentioned your Cowboys. Tony Romo wearing a jumbo flak jacket. Is he going to play against
Redskins? He's a man, right? He's really turned it around. I think he's going to try to play. I really feel like if he hadn't come in the fourth quarter last week, he was done. He would have sat till week eight or maybe even the rest of the year. But here's my thing with Romo. You know how he screws up the fourth quarter every game?
Right.
He sat out the third quarter. So if he just plays three quarters every week, in his mind, he's never getting to the fourth quarter, and then he excels and they win.
So they should start him in the second quarter. That's
right,
what you're saying.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I got you.
The last question for you, and again, we're talking to the Cousin Sal. You can follow him on Twitter at the Cousin Sal. You can read all about football on Sal's blog on grantland.com and see him at on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. And I guess your posts are up at jimmykimmellive.net too. Are we getting into the point of the season now where the fans are going to get louder and louder about some of these underperforming quarterbacks early on, and they're going to go, hey, we've got a decent backup, or hey, let's give up on this guy so we don't lose the whole season? We're starting to get to that point, right?
Yeah, you mean how like the Eagles did last week with Michael Vick? They're putting that Kafka guy in? Yes, I think that was a good move. Michael Vick is overrated. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm kidding.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
I was thinking more of like my beloved Seahawks, for instance.
I don't know what is with that team. That is the worst team in the league. But I do think the coaches are more on the hot seat now than ever before. So you're going to see like a Pete Carroll, and like as an example, this Jaguars team is starting their rookie quarterback. Yeah, I think you're going to see some quick changes. And
what about Donovan McNabb? How long do you give him?
I don't know. I mean, that team's blown two double digit leads in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If they have a rookie quarterback from Florida State, they can come in. I see if it blows it this week. Yeah, you'll see.
This is a tough game too. Detroit, the Lions are for real, and I think they're going to give the Vikings a hard time.
I do too. I actually, as a bonus, if you want, I'm taking the Vikings plus the points, but I'm not loving that. I just like
okay.
them.
Okay. All right. Panthers over the Jaguars, Chargers over the Chiefs, Raiders over the Jets. Cousin Sal, you're the best, man. Thanks so much for coming on the Kevin Bean Show. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Sal. Let's talk to you.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
Does anyone else smell Astroglide?
Astroglide.
Astroglide.
K-Rock.
Let's talk to the hardest working woman in show business, LaQuisha. You got a full-time job in the hair salon, yet
every Friday
you make time to come on our show free.
To talk about
the Jersey Shore.
Why the hell do I do it?
Well, you told us at one time you loved doing it because you loved making fun of stupid white people.
I know, but look, you don't want to eat a pound of fudge, no matter how much you love it, you know? I've had my full of stupid white people, that's for sure. I have had enough of it. The Jersey Shore is killing me.
Now that you're far enough into the season to make an opinion, is the season in Italy any better or worse than previous years?
No, it's exactly the same as previous years. That's the problem.
Okay.
I'm so damn tired of everything happening over and over again. Like last week, Snooki went to jail. Remember the season before in Jersey when she went to jail and that was a big plot point?
Right.
Same damn thing happened.
Yeah.
And she got out at the beginning of the episode, and that's it. Everybody forgot about it. Okay, the old Snooki went to jail. When are they going to finally kill her?
I don't know if any of the stuff that she's done has required the death penalty.
Yes, it does. Have you seen her pistachio commercial? That death penalty right there.
What was last night's episode about?
Well, you're going to find this hard to believe, but they all get ready to go out and drink.
Huh.
They're getting ready to go to the clubs. And so the situation, you know, usually he's with Vinny and Paul, and his name is Mike. And so that's MVP, they call it, when the three of them go out. But this time they're going out with Ronnie, too. So what are they going to do with that? That puts an R in the MVP.
Boys Night Out, MVP plus Ronnie is Mr. VP.
Mr. VP.
Okay, all right.
What the hell does that even mean, Mr. VP?
They just have to put initials on everything.
Does that mean like it's like drinking with Joe Biden? That doesn't sound fun.
No, not at all.
Well, when they go out, that crazy girl Brittany, who's been stalking the situation, she comes over the house. And Snooki think it'd be funny to put Brittany in Mike's bed so when he comes home at the end of the night with another girl, what's he going to do with all these both women? How's he going to fix that situation? Well, he does meet some Australian girl at the club and brings her home, pulls back the covers, and there's crazy girl in bed. And everyone's laughing, he's not going to get himself out of this one, but he does.
I got this Australian chick who I have to find out if she's DTF. Brittany's already in my bed. So I just say, hey, you know what? I already got a bun in the oven. No need to warm another one up. Time to go home, Australian chick.
I think he's confused about the phrase bun in the oven, by the way.
That's something he doesn't want.
That's not something you're looking for when you're hooking up with some random stranger at a club at night. That's not what you want.
Yeah.
But he tells the poor Australian girl, go beat it, girl. I got this crazy girl in my bed already. And Australian girl just kind of hangs her head and walks out of the house. Because wow. You don't want to miss out on a chance to have sex with the situation.
No, that's pretty rare.
How depressed she must be. Well, the big story last night was that Gianni, Snooki's boyfriend from Jersey, he's coming to visit her in Italy, and she is very, very excited. And when he gets there, all she wants to do is have sex with him. He wants to take a shower because he's been traveling on planes for 24 hours, and she just won't have none of it.
I understand you've been traveling for like a while, but dude, we have plans right now. Mushroom for breathing and, you know, like doing everything for the bed, just making sure like we don't get diseases.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no better way to sanitize something than to hit it with some Febreze. That'll kill all the germs that situation done left there in the smush room. Just spray some Febreze on the sheets, and then it's like being disinfected at a hospital or something.
And that is a very effective form of birth control as well.
Yeah, just spray it everywhere. Febreze good for everything. Well, she won't stop talking about this Gianni and having sex with him. That's all she does. When the minute he gets to the door, how much she wants to have sex with him, and then she gives us the interesting details about his private parts.
I just need to get it in. I need to touch your freaking tan. I shouldn't have said that, but his wiener is tan, and I love it.
I do not need to know that his wiener is tan.
No, no, no.
And knowing how these people tan, it's orange. It's not tan at all. He's been spray tanned there. That's what happened. The most disturbing thing to happen last night, by far, and maybe the whole series of this show, and that's saying something, is this admission that Snooki made about her new boyfriend last night.
Me and Gianni, we're going to have Guido babies. I know it. I can't wait to pop those suckers out. They're going to be so cute and tan. I'm so excited. Oh, I hope I have a C-section because I don't want it to up my vagina.
Oh, dear Lord.
And we're back to where we were years ago on Laguna Beach. These girls who think that they're tan, so their babies will be tan, LaQuisha.
She's going to have spray tan inside her when she's carrying a baby. That's what she's going to do, like some sort of suppository or something. Listen, white people, I have no control over this. This is one of yours. Take control. Do not let this woman procreate. No babies can ever happen from this union.
Amen.
Of these two people being together. So after they have the sex, they go out drinking. And Snooki gets drunk. Surprise, surprise. And while she's dancing up on a table, she lifts up her dress up to about her waist, which on Snooki is not very high, and shows off all of her panties and what she's got down there in that region.
Oh, no.
And her boyfriend, Gianni, surprise, is embarrassed by this. Now, I didn't think these people could be embarrassed by anything, but this guy is embarrassed, and he walks out of the club, and he storms out, and he says he's going to leave her because she's a skanky, and her behavior is just unacceptable, to which I respond, you know you're dating Snooki, right? Well, they go into what I can only call Sammy and Ronnie mode, where they're fighting and arguing, and Snooki is drunk and just sloppy, disgusting, hateful.
No, I'm not going to get away from you, you ass.
There goes my life.
What do you mean, you psycho? I waited for you. What are you talking about? You're so mean. I hate you. You're so mean. You're so mean. What are you talking about? I love you. The is wrong with you. I hate you.
Oh, sweet Lord in heaven.
Look, any guy who gets on a plane from Jersey and flies like 14 hours to Italy to have sex with Snooki deserves whatever misery comes his way.
She hates him. She loves him. My daughter, my sister. I don't know what the hell's going on with this girl, but he walked out the house. He's like, I had enough of this. I'm gone.
Thank God.
Which I answered too late because you already caught whatever is going to catch from this girl. That's for sure. But besides that, Snooki now is just perplexed. She just cannot wrap her head around why anyone would leave her.
I'm really a good girlfriend. I didn't cheat on you. I didn't do anything. Maybe I'm a little crazy when I drink, but that's it. Like, I just don't understand why he left me.
Why would a man leave a good woman like that who shows off her vagina in clubs and has lesbian sex with her roommate two episodes ago and had sex with the situation 2 months ago? What kind of man leaves a quality woman like that?
An awfully narrow-minded one, I'll tell you that,
what
apparently.
What do men want? What more does a woman have to do to keep a man? That's what I want to know. Damn.
LaQuisha, how many more of these can there be this season?
I don't know. It's been like, what, like 100 already?
I think we're about 100 episodes into this year, yeah.
So I'm guessing another 100, I guess.
All right. Well, listen, if you are not swinging from a rope from the hair salon next Friday, we'll talk to you again, all right?
I'm not killing myself. I'm killing you for making me watch this.
See you later.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
This is probably the best episode they've ever done.
I know. This is awesome.
You just want me to go start frying up some eggs? You just want me to step out for a minute while your girlfriend comes on the phone? Would that make you happy?
You can, because I tell you something, there's no bigger Fringe fan than I am. In fact, you may remember I was the host of the Evening with Fringe at the Paley Center in Beverly Hills last year.
Oh, right.
I had a chance to be on the stage and moderate the panel when we were talking to John Noble, who is brilliant as Walter on Fringe, and Anna Torv was there, and some of the creators and the writers behind the scenes. And as talented as she is, as great as she is on Fringe, she's even a kinder, nicer person in real life. So it's a pleasure to talk to Anna again.
And that's why I'm glad that Gurmug is taking the cue and playing the theme for Fringe for us as we bring her on the phone. Fringe returns for its new season tonight at 9 on the Fox Channel, an all-new season premiere. I'm going to step out and let Ralph talk to his girlfriend. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm very well. I could not be more excited about the return of Fringe tonight. There are very few television series that I've seen every single episode of, and Fringe is one of them. And the start of the new season, there's a lot going on, a lot we need to talk about.
I know. I can't believe it's Saturday tonight. It feels like it's been a little while.
What for folks who aren't quite caught up yet, we have lost one of the major players on the show. Joshua Jackson's character, Peter Bishop, no longer exists on the show. He has been removed from existence. And not like Charlie Sheen was in 2 and a Half Men. I mean, really, literally removed from existence. I'm assuming we're going to address that right off the bat. Right, Anna?
Except Peter's going to come back.
What?
We know that for sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
That's sort of how we start. Peter Bishop is the event of this season. So, Josh is coming back. That's not giving anything away saying that, I don't think.
No, I think we all knew he was. But pretty much he has saved the world as we know. And in fact, we have a little clip from the show. This is from the end of last season where Peter talks about what he's going to have to do to keep the worlds together.
I understand what the machine does.
Our two worlds are inextricable. If one side dies, we all die. So I've torn holes in both the universes, and they lead here. A bridge, so that we can begin to work together to fix.
They don't remember Peter.
How could they? He never existed. He served his purpose.
Anna, you guys have to be so proud of the show and how rich the storytelling is in Fringe.
What did you say? I do tend to. Did you say yes?
Yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable program because there's so much going on, and we've got the different universes and everything else happening. As an actress, how do you keep that separate? I mean, you play several characters in the show. You play yourself in the first universe, and then you play your alternate self as well. As an actress, how do you keep all the storylines and things, how do you keep those plates spinning?
Oh, I don't know. I think you just focus on what you're doing, you know, in any one particular moment. You sort of just make sure you know exactly where you've come from, where you're going, and who you are for that second. And then it just changes quickly.
Hey, can I interrupt? Can I come in between you two lovebirds and ask a question?
Feel free.
In a show as complex as this one, do you understand the bigger picture, or do you just go in and do your scenes and know what you need to accomplish in that couple of minutes of tape, but don't really see at the time, like the writers do, how it all fits into the overall story?
I think it's different. I think the boys are much more kind of connected to the overall story. And I mean, like, they have much, but I think when I step back, I know what's going on. But I tend to focus on the minute, because otherwise you become a little bit, I know you can't play
the overarching mythology, you can only play what you want in that second, right?
And that kind of works for your character, though, right, Anna? Because Olivia's kind of that way, too. She's kind of trying to figure everything out, and she's kind of lost in the bigger picture.
Oh, totally. That's like the one thing that I am truly grateful for, is that I don't have to say very much at the time. And all the guys do. And when we do all of that stuff, I don't have to look that up, because in the scene I get to say, meaning what? Well,
but I would imagine you run into the same thing that, say, actors on Lost used to run into when that show was on the air, which is fans expect you to have answers at your fingertip. When they run into you at the airport, they want to be able to ask you what the hell's going on, and you can't possibly know everything they want to know.
I would just defer to John Noble. When in doubt, defer to John Noble. He's got the answers for everything. He's really good at researching stuff, too.
Yeah, he takes his role very seriously as Walter. I think he really is a guy who's dedicated to knowing what he's talking about, even when he's playing it on screen.
Well, you have to know what you're talking about. That's why I'm relieved I don't have to talk about all of that stuff. But yeah, he's good. He does know about it all.
We are talking to actress Anna Torv on the program. I think we've had her on every season that Fringe has been on, and we're happy to have her back on as the show comes back on your TV tonight on Fox at 9. Hey, while we have you, Anna, I know that you are involved in a charity thing with Oxfam International, which is one of those groups that does so much great work around the world, and you have something that you can offer to listeners who maybe are fans of yours or fans of Fringe. Tell us about it.
It's just been released. It's a really cute dustman's hat that a friend of mine has sort of collaborated on, and 100% of the profits goes to Oxfam, and they are sorely, sorely in need of that at the moment. They're doing some amazing work over in East Africa, and one of the things that Oxfam is really fantastic at is sort of like being on the ground in crises, sorting out sanitation and clean water and making sure that, you know, people are sort of fed and, you know, not getting sick. So if you want to donate, please do to Oxfam. But if you want to buy a hat, which then does, you know, end up, you know, money then does go there, you can try to...
I've got it for you. It's adventurehat.com. Adventurehat.com if you want to see this. And it's the kind of a newsboy cap that, you know, you see Cameron Diaz wearing from sometimes. It's very presentable. Ralph, I know you'll be buying one now that you know Anna is behind it and promoting it.
I'm buying two.
We're going to see you start wearing newsboy caps when you come in. But yeah, you can go to adventurehat.com to buy that. And of course, you can go to the Oxfam website to get more information about Oxfam International. All right, we're almost out of time, Ralph. You got time for one more question before Fringe comes back tonight.
I just want to say real quickly, again, as I watched the Emmys, Anna, it's just a shame that you and John weren't nominated again for Emmys this year. Your work on the show is just brilliant, and it's unacceptable that they keep ignoring you.
I think it's just fantastic that we're about to start season 4 of our show. Gosh, I didn't think that we were going to be doing that when I auditioned for the pilot. So thank you to our fans who keep watching and hope they enjoy tonight.
Tonight at 9 on Fox, it's Fringe. Anna, thanks for coming on the Kevin and Bean Show. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, boys, let's go do this. Loud and proud.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Ralph, it's the Showbiz Beat one more time. You got stuff to give away, and then we sing that song, and then it's the weekend.
Can't do it. I just don't have it. I just don't have it in me.
You can
you're
do
too
it.
Tired.
I'm spent.
Too tired.
I'm spent.
Well, you saved up all your energy for Anna Torv, and now you're done with her. You just want to smoke, right, and lay down.
I can't wait for Fringe tonight. I'm so excited.
Is it your favorite show on the air?
It really is. No. Oh, man, I got so many favorites, but that certainly is one of them. I mean, it cycles the way seasons do. Like when Dexter's on the air, that's probably my favorite. But then
right.
Fringe comes back, and then Mad Men comes back. So it depends what's on the air at any given
exactly.
time.
But, yeah.
Boy, I sure do love Fringe, and I hope more people watch it because I know the
TV shows are like women for you. Whichever one you're in bed with at the time is your favorite.
Love the one you're with, man. That's what I always say. Me and Stephen Stills. All right, let's talk about tickets to the very special Kevin and Bean advanced screening of Real Steel.
Yay!
Hugh Jackman, Evangeline Lilly.
Wow.
Boxing robots. This movie has everything. Cannot wait to see it. If you're like me, you're going to want to go to our special advanced screening on Tuesday, October the 4th. I have some pairs of tickets to give away. The exact number eludes me at this moment. I believe I have two...
Chip will take care of that part.
Two pairs of tickets to give away. 1-800-520-1067. First two callers to get through will win a pair of passes to the advanced screening. If you don't win, don't dismay, because the movie comes out everywhere Friday, October the 7th, so you can check it out then, which is nice. You got that going for you.
Got that going for
which
you.
Which is nice. We kind of skipped over Talk Like a Pirate Day this year. We did not make a big deal out of it. We did not give it its due. Some listeners were upset.
Yeah.
Others were thankful.
Yeah, also true.
But regardless, we did not handle it. I wish now, in retrospect, I had, because I would have had this story, which is the fact there are four pirates from England who have modified their car to look just like Captain Jack Sparrow's ship from Pirates of the Caribbean, the Black Pearl.
Oh, my gosh.
That's commitment.
They dress in full pirate garb, and they're driving their ship car across Europe. That is their plan, to drive across the entire continent as the Black Pearl.
Okay.
Just hanging out the windows, being all piratey.
Right.
They got to Germany, and the German cops pulled them over. Oh, killjoys. Why don't you go start another world war, you freaking krauts? And pulled them in and said, we have to give this car a total safety inspection before we allow you to drive on our roads. Well, they pulled it over. They put them in dry dock, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And they got on there, those scallywags, and they looked that pirate car up and down, and turns out it was perfectly legal and safe. Ha! Suck it, Germans!
Is this the modern-day John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Do you feel that this vehicle is road safe? Yes, I do, yes, officer. Yes, I do.
So congratulations to those guys. They're continuing their voyage across Europe, and they are very dedicated Pirates of the Caribbean fans.
Look, there are movies that I love. There are movies that I've seen 100 times. There's no movie that I'm going to go out and dress up and tool across Europe pretending to be in. I don't get that level of fanaticism.
If I had the money and the time, I would absolutely dress up as Batman and drive across Europe in a Batmobile for sure.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. You kidding me? It'd be awesome. Not to mention the chicks you'd get. Arnold Schwarzenegger has just made a deal to write his memoirs. His autobiography is set to be published in October of 2012. So we're going to have to wait a year before we read the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of the story. But they've already got a title. Total Recall.
Well,
see,
of course it is.
What they've done?
Of course it is.
It's awesome.
You think he'll include his illegitimate children in the book? Or will that be conveniently missing from his version of events of his life?
How can he not? How can he write a book and not include that? I mean, it's certainly what most people will have remembered about him. When that book comes out, that story will still be connected to his name in a very strong way. So I think he's got to address it.
We have a governor, Mr. Schwarzenegger. He's from Russia, I think. Right? Mr. Terminator.
Yeah, Mr. Terminator is from Russia. Absolutely, sir. Maybe you want to pick up the book and brush up on your Arnold Schwarzenegger facts just a touch. The Kardashians aren't happy.
And look, oh, good. Some good news.
When the Kardashians are happy, nobody's happy. That's what I've always said. Turns out they're upset that their brother Rob was in the bottom three in this go-around of Dancing with the Stars. Kourtney sent out an angry tweet asking how Elizabetha Canales could be safe when Rob was not. That was my answer. I just tweeted, ding, ding, ding.
Yep.
And Chloe said it was so odd that Rob was at the bottom and that shows like this are rigged all the time. So there's some sort of controversy. They're claiming some sort of fatwa against the Kardashian family over there in Dancing with the Stars.
Are they suggesting that he was given intentionally low scores because they are, you know, in it to make sure that he doesn't do well? They're discriminating against him just because of his name?
Once again, the Kardashians are being persecuted.
But isn't he just a terrible dancer?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
But at least he puts no effort into it whatsoever. I saw him and he was just like barely just walking. He had like his 1,000-yard stare and he's kind of walking through the steps. It was hideous. So I think he got just what he deserves.
Suck it!
That's right.
That was one of the judges. I think they may have a point.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Bruce Springsteen. I'll tell you. For a Jewish kid, he makes a lot of good music. That's Springsteen, I've got to tell you. He is 62 years old today. See, that's a joke because he's not Jewish, Beer Mux. He just sounds like that name. Belonging to a person. Jason Alexander from Seinfeld is 52. Chai McBride from Pushing Daisies and Boston Public is 50 years old. Annie DeFranco, I can see the finish line. I'm on my knees. I'm the runner who's got the cramps and just can't get there. It's very frustrating.
Girls are passing you right now, by the way, in the final, 400 yards of the marathon.
Andy DeFranco's 41 years old. Lazy Bone.
Yeah.
He is 36 years old. Jermaine Dupri, while we're talking about rappers, he is also 39 years old today. And Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder Matt Kemp, who's having a hell of a season. He is 27 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. Go Eagles.
Thank you very much, Ralph.
I hope y'all join us for a brand new Kevin and Bean show on Monday. It's Hot Chick Day Monday.
What?
Kat Dennings from Two Broke Girls.
And a cup.
And our girlfriend Judy Greer, too. All going to be here.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend.
Florida?
Pass it over to me.
Hey, want to party on my
Oh, come on.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend.
Teenage lover.
Pass it over to me.
Oh, cooch.
Kevin and Bean.
The world famous K-Rock.
When your life looks at you, buddy, take a fast lane.
Don't bogart that joint.
That's real talk right there, man.
Pass it over around.
I like eggs. Do you like eggs?
There is a new way to get a facial.
I just pass it on down.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
Go on, get out, all of you. Go on, get up. Get up, sit down. I'm turning you all out. I'm not having my house filled with filthy pervert. Now, look, I'm giving just half a minute and then I'm going to call the police, so get out.
Your leaving is our Christmas.
You know, a lot of people wonder what happens after the show, and I'll tell you. Well, the clothes come off, and it's a big sweaty pile. We turn the cameras to the wall, and we love.
Y'all's a bunch of bitches. Later, nerds.